You are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Dan Feldman here. Welcome to Locked On Pistons. You can follow Locked On Pistons on Audio Boom or subscribe on iTunes. You can follow me on Twitter at DanFeldmanNBA. The Pistons host the Knicks tonight, and I talked with Jared Dubin of Locked On Knicks about that game, about where the Knicks are, and you know, obviously, we went back and forth a little bit about where the Pistons are, too. So we'll finish up this episode with that. But first, I guess the biggest non-news of the day is the rookie-scale contract extension deadline came and went without a deal for KCP. So he'll be heading into restricted free agency next summer. Not the end of the world for the Pistons. A lot of times, these contract extension negotiations aren't so much about how much a team values a player and how much a player values himself, but just about when the sides are comfortable locking up a deal. KCP cannot unilaterally leave the Pistons next summer. He could take the qualifying offer and become an unrestricted free agent in 2018, but that'd be pretty costly and risky to him. It's almost never done for a player of his caliber, except as you all probably know, the one time it did happen with a player of this level was Greg Monroe, and he left. So there is a risk there, but most likely the Pistons will either re-sign KCP or match an offer sheet for him. But that's not a given. They could trade him before the summer. They could let him sign an offer sheet and leave. There are other possibilities, like an extension would have been stabilizing. So there's some uncertainty, but not too much. The only other shooting guard to sign a contract extension yesterday was Victor Oladipo with the Thunder. He's going to get $84 million over 4 years. And I think that bodes well for the Pistons, because before that, the only other shooting guard on record with an extension was CJ McCollum for $106 million when that was believed to be the max. There's more to this, and you can read what I wrote on it. You can look it up at NBC Sports. But CJ McCollum didn't sign a true max extension. He signed one for a set dollar amount for the projected max, and that just protects the Trailblazers in case the actual max comes out to be way higher than they were projecting, or even a little higher, I guess. So it's not a true max, just a believed to be max. Victor Oladipo well below that at $84 million. And I think that just will help the Pistons with a negotiating point. Not that Rich Paul and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope have to listen to it. I don't think I'm breaking any news here, and you should have thought about this in common sense already. When an agent and a team are negotiating a contract, they're going to bring up comparisons that look favorable. You know, I would rather have Victor Oladipo than KCP. It's not, you know, completely clear. It's a close call. If somebody would rather have KCP, I wouldn't call them crazy, but I would rather have Victor Oladipo. I think he's a slightly more valuable player. So the Pistons could go to Rich Paul next summer and say, well, Victor Oladipo signed for $84 million. KCP is not as good, so there's no way we're giving him that much. Well, Rich Paul doesn't have to listen to that. It might be a fine argument on the Pistons' part to take a player who's maybe a little bit underpaid and say, hey, this is the comparison we're using. But Rich Paul could dig up a player who's not as good, who's making more, and they can go back and forth. So these comparisons are useful, but they're easily exploited, and teams will have to come to their own conclusions and own terms and not just base it on comparable or even barely comparable deals. And especially because Victor Oladipo signed his extension now. He's getting security now. Not only is he getting $84 million, he's getting the guarantee of $84 million, where KCP is taking a chance going into restricted free agency. He could get hurt. His value could decline. A lot of things could happen. So he is taking that risk. I think justifiably, he should expect a higher upside if he comes through at about the same level as Victor Oladipo. He is not getting that security, KCP. So, I think it would be reasonable for him to seek more than $84 million, especially because beyond that, beyond the fact that if he takes the risk and it pays off, the market changes. Contract extensions, these don't start until next season. Victor Oladipo is only going to make a few million dollars this year. His $21 million salary, that kicks in 2017, 2018. So to a certain extent, these extensions are the first step of setting the market for next year and also predicting the market for next year. Maybe Victor Oladipo and his agent predicted the market wrong. And I sort of think, depending on how they value security, that maybe they did. It's not going to be a strong class for wings. Teams need a lot of wings as they're going to play small. There is a report that it'll be easier to sign restricted free agents to offer sheets. You'll be able to do it July 1st. So that'll increase interest in restricted free agents. I think there's going to be a robust market for KCP next summer to the point where he could maybe get the max. Okay, if he does, good for him. The Pistons will have to make a call whether to match or not. I think they probably would, just because it'd be so hard as an over-the-cap team to replace him. You know, there's no other shooting guard on the roster of his caliber. The Pistons are going to be good enough now where it's going to be tough to draft somebody like that. I see Stanley Johnson as more of a combo forward. I know there are some people who think, oh, he can be a 2-3. I think he's going to be too limited speed-wise as a shooting guard, as a 2. Don't really want to have to put him into that position. So I do think the Pistons will re-sign KCP or match an offer sheet for him. But the Oladipo extension yesterday does add a little twist to it. So we'll keep an eye on that. But for now, let's talk with Jared Dubin of Locked On Knicks. Revenge of Brandon Jennings. Is it going to be as exciting as I think Jennings wants it to be?
I don't think anything is ever as exciting as Brandon Jennings wants it to be. That's sort of like his defining quality, is he wants everything to be so exciting, and then it sort of clangs off the rim more times than not.
Well, if you call a very prominent up-and-coming player on probably the league's most popular team a snitch, like, you're going to raise excitement. I don't think that one clanged off the rim.
Yeah, that was interesting. Look, the Knicks, this is something I've said on a few different podcasts now. The Knicks have a lot of guys that say stuff. Brandon Jennings is definitely included in that group. Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah, Carmelo sometimes says stuff. It's a team full of saying stuff kind of guys. Are the Pistons like that? I feel like when I went into that locker room last year, it was a fairly quiet bunch for the most part.
Yeah, this is definitely a quiet, reserved team. I mean, the one guy who will say stuff, if asked, is Marcus Morris, and he just has no filter.
That's not surprising, actually. I didn't wind up talking to him. I talked to KCP for like 3 minutes.
Quiet.
I think he said 8 words combined.
Yeah, he might be the most quiet of all of them. Marcus Morris, like, he's not going to go out of his way like Brandon Jennings, but he'll say what he thinks.
KCP, I was talking to them early in the season about recreating the Stan Van Gundy era magic, because that's obviously what a lot of people have said that they're trying to do with the pick and roll and Andre Drummond and all that. So I wanted to talk to the wing guys about it, because that's like a very important part of it too. So I wound up talking to KCP about defense for a few minutes. He barely said anything. And Lang Whitaker from NBA.com was in the locker room too, and he's like, you should have tried to talk to him about Georgia. That's the only thing he likes talking about.
Well, I'm glad to know there's one thing, because I've never found anything.
Yeah, I can't talk to him about Georgia. I don't know anything about it. I know it's a state. I've never been there. You know what? I've been to the Atlanta airport, which is massive.
Atlanta's a great city.
I've stopped there on my way back from college twice. Those are the only times I've been to Georgia.
I highly recommend venturing a little bit outside the airport. Although if you are stuck in the airport, you can still get one of the best parts of Atlanta, which is a Varsity Chili Slaw Dog.
Yeah, I mean, look, it takes 45 minutes to get from one end of the airport to the other. I'm sure you get a whole lot of food there.
So let's get back to Pistons and Knicks. I wanted to ask you sort of broader strokes first, because I am curious about this. I feel like for the Pistons, I don't know much more about them now than I did coming into this season. They are not as good as the Raptors. They are better than the Magic and Bucks. I was fairly certain of those things coming into the season, but this is, for the most part, from what I've seen so far, the team that I thought they are, and I think they're going to beat the Knicks at home tonight, and you know, I think that's part of the team I think they are, but I'm not so sure. I'm curious, do you feel like you know these Knicks a little better? Or is this, when we talked about them the preseason, is that still sort of what we're going by?
Yeah, I would say it's, you don't know them at all yet. They played, you know, a game against the Cavs where they got the doors blown off of them in a, something that, you know, was well within the realm of possibility of things that were going to happen on opening night, on ring night in Cleveland. Like, they're clearly not as good as the Cavs. I think that there are situations where they can be competitive in a game with the Cavs. I think it's even possible that on a certain night they can steal a game against them. But they're not as good as the Cavs. Like, that's very clear. Then they came home and played so much better against the Grizzlies. And I think it's clear that they can beat teams like the Grizzlies, which are, you know, not in the first tier of good teams in the league, but somewhere within that second and third tier. I think the Knicks have the talent, and on nights when they put it all together, they can beat teams like that. I don't know if they're necessarily, quote-unquote, better than teams like that. Like, I think if the Grizzlies play the Knicks 100 times, the Grizzlies would probably win more often. Mm-hmm. But the Knicks are clearly good enough to beat teams like that on any given night. And I think we already knew both of those things coming into the season. And the way that the two games happened, like, everything they did poorly in game one, they did a lot better in game two. And I don't know if that's something that's going to be consistent every single night. It's going to be very difficult to know what they are until we get probably, like, even a quarter of the way into the season, just because they haven't played together at all yet. Like, the first game of the season was the first time their starting five stepped on the floor together, ever.
Is there anything in particular when you look up at this matchup with the Pistons that you think, hey, this would be a good opportunity, not to know this, because like you said, it's early and you're not going to know anything yet, but where you think, hey, in this matchup, we can learn a lot about something, about this. Is there anything that stands out above the rest, or is it just still like the general knowledge gathering?
No, yeah, I think that this is the first team that's really going to throw like four or five different guys at Carmelo.
Mm-hmm.
He spent a lot of time with LeBron on him in game one. He spent a bunch of time. I mean, it wasn't the whole game, but James Ennis was on him a bunch, and then Jermichael Green was on him a bunch in game two. I feel like the Pistons are going to mix and match a lot more than either of those teams, you know, whether it's Morris or Tobias Harris or even KCP. So it'll be interesting to see how he responds to that with a whole set of new teammates. And then just, you know, super athletic big men have been giving them problems for years. So how they respond to Drummond as well is something that's definitely going to be interesting. You know, I would have wanted to see them against another attacking pick and roll point guard that wasn't Kyrie Irving, who's literally unguardable for anybody on the Knicks. But obviously Reggie will not be there. So that's a test that we won't get to see. I mean, is there anything that the Knicks present that you think you'll learn a lot about the Pistons from?
So you brought up point guard, and that's sort of where I'm curious, because I am curious about Derrick Rose, too. I mean, just beyond somebody following the Pistons, what Derrick Rose is going to do in New York is an interesting story. So I am curious about him. So he's not a perfect, even level opponent. But the Pistons guards, their point guards, and they're going with Ish Smith now and Beno Udrih behind him with Reggie Jackson hurt, they haven't been very good defensively. And I feel like Derrick Rose, this is an opportunity where, okay, yeah, Derrick Rose can get going, but he's also somebody, I think, at this point, who if you play some smart defense, you can slow him. Like, he is not Kyrie Irving. He's not this point guard where no matter what you do, it's not going to work. So I am curious to see the point guard defense. And I think that for the Pistons, that's where you can learn something in this game.
Yeah, that'll be really interesting, because for most of that game against Memphis, they did slow him. He had 9 points with about 3 or 4 minutes left in the game on, I think, 11 shots. And then on two possessions, like a couple minutes away from each other, he just drove right into the teeth of the defense and made little floaters. Those were the baskets that kind of extended the lead to really put it out of reach, so they were really big plays within the context of the game, but he had not played very well or even been all that involved to that point. And I didn't rewatch the game, so I don't know, because I wasn't necessarily paying 100% close attention to Rose in particular, so I don't know if it was anything specific that the Grizzlies did to take him out of being directly involved, but I'll definitely be looking for that against Detroit to see if it was something that they may have noticed on film as a way to sort of get him to be uninvolved, if that makes sense.
It does. So is this a game where we should be looking at the Pistons as favored to win? I know the Knicks are so unpredictable, and that's what I think we spent our whole preseason podcast talking about, how completely unpredictable this team is. But is this one where more likely than not the Pistons win it?
Yeah, I think until you see the Knicks go and beat playoff caliber teams on the road, then it's hard to say that they should be favored against any team that's that caliber of a team. You know, obviously the Pistons did make the playoffs last year. They're expected, I think, by most people to make the playoffs again, especially once they get Reggie back. So I think until you see them actually do it and go beat teams, that you have to consider them even like a slight under. I didn't look at the spread for this game.
I would imagine
the Pistons are favored by a few points, like 4 or 5, something like that, in that zone where it's just like, oh yeah, these teams are of similar quality, but we don't really know what's going to happen, so we're just going to give the home team a few points.
Yep.
And say, go ahead and pick, and you're going to lose either way.
Yep, I'm with you. I see it the same way. And although I do think the Pistons are a little better, I can't say I know that for certain yet, but I do think the Pistons are a little better and playing at home. And, you know, it's not a back-to-back situation where there's something else going on. So I think on simplest terms, you do have to look at this as a more likely than not, though not overwhelmingly, but more likely than not, Pistons win.
What do you think that they'll do to deal with the Kristaps threat? Because he's such a unique player, and I know that they played Toronto in that first game. They had Patrick Patterson, who's a shooting forward, but obviously not nearly as big. And then they played the Bucks and the Magic, right? And they don't have really, I mean, Teletovich is a shooting forward in Milwaukee, but again, not as big. I mean, that's a style of player that they haven't really dealt with yet in terms of a guy being that big. I mean, what do you think that they do to deal with that in particular?
This is why the Pistons signed John Luehr. You know, they had Anthony Tolliver last year, who was that stretch for, you know, the one who is a little more defensive oriented, a little more comfortable as a power forward, because Marcus Morris can definitely do that type of thing, but he was playing small forward most of the year, and it was enough of adjustment for him to be a little uncomfortable. Tobias Harris can also play the four in Stan Van Gundy system, but coming from the Magic midseason, it was a little uncomfortable for him. So a lot of that got pushed onto Anthony Tolliver. For all the great things about Anthony Tolliver, though, not a great athlete, not very tall. So they signed John Luehr just basically to be taller than Anthony Tolliver, where matchups like Kristaps Porzingis are not as imposing. Yeah, Porzingis is very good. He's more talented than Luehr, and definitely has a higher upside and can be better a lot of nights. But I think the Pistons will look to Luehr to contain Porzingis a little bit, especially if Porzingis gets going against the starting forwards.
Do you think they have anyone? Because this is something that has bit him in both of the first couple games. I know they have several, like, sort of stretchy types at the combo forward spot. But which of those guys do you think is most likely to give him an up fake and then take it to the rim? Because that's something that Kevin Love did in game one, and both JaMychal Green and Jarrell Martin did in game two. And I'm not sure if he necessarily is closing out as hard against somebody like Marcus Morris. I'm curious if you think that those guys can take advantage of that when he does do it.
I absolutely do. I think Tobias Harris can do it. I think Marcus Morris can do it. And I think John Luehr can do it. That's actually one thing I've been pleasantly surprised by, seeing him up close a little more, is his ability to put the ball on the floor. And he's also the one most likely to make Porzingis pay if he doesn't close out hard. So the strategy might be, when it's Morris and when it's Harris, yeah, let them shoot from outside and take your chances. It's not an ideal strategy, but those are two talented offensive players.
Yeah, I think that Harris is probably the guy most comfortable putting it on the ground. And certainly he's a little bit of a more consistent shooter, at least, than Morris. The last question I had for you is, if Carmelo really gets going early on, who do you think they wind up turning to sort of get him to calm down, or not calm down, cool down?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head earlier. The Pistons' advantage against, you know, these super talented small forwards like him is you just throw a wave of players at him. I mean, it's going to be nonstop. It's going to be Marcus Morris, Tobias Harris, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Stanley Johnson. If the Knicks go small, I wouldn't be surprised if John Luehr got matched up at least a little bit with him. So I think there are just so many different options to throw at him where even if somebody's working, you can just keep rotating somebody else over and keeping somebody fresh. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is the best defender of the bunch. He's a little more perimeter-oriented. I think Carmelo could have success taking him inside. So you just play it by feel within the game.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. All right, Dan, that was good stuff. Thanks for chatting with me, and best of luck to your squad. And, you know, we'll see what happens. Think it should be a good game.
Thanks, Jared, and thanks, everybody, for listening. You can follow Locked On Pistons on Audio Boom or subscribe on iTunes. You can follow me on Twitter at Dan Feldman NBA. Thanks for listening.